Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Governor Snyder says he will indeed sign the bills giving almost $200 million state dollars to Detroit's bankruptcy settlement. That's after the state Senate approved the package yesterday. Rick Pluta is the Lansing Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick, we watched this package of nine bills bringing almost $200 million as part of the grand bargain. We saw it sail through the Senate yesterday. Fill us in. How did we get to that point?
Well, this was not a done deal in the Senate as recently as yesterday morning. You know, half a dozen, maybe seven Republicans were on board. And the game changer really seems to have been federal judge Gerald Rosen, who's sort of been the chief negotiator on the grand bargain, coming in and explaining the deal to lawmakers, how the numbers in the grand bargain came together, that they weren't just random. Now, most Republicans still voted against the main bills in the package, but Rosen seemed to give them enough comfort, or at least enough of them enough comfort, to put the package over the goal line. A key point was the possibility of a lawsuit filed by pensioners, and it forced the Senate, like it's about to confront the pensioners who are voting on the bargain. And the question is, in the words of Clint Eastwood, you know, how lucky do you feel?
Sure.
If this deal goes south, all of this winds up in court. And if it loses, the state could be on the hook for all those pension costs if courts rule that you know, the pension protections are in the state constitution. Mm. Now, on the other side, pensioners who might want to reject the deal have to ask themselves the same question. How lucky do I feel? Do I want to stake my future on what courts might decide in a battle over pension rights?
You know, Rick, we did hear last week and week before that or so that the Tea Party group, Americans for Prosperity, had said, ooh, we're going after lawmakers who support these bills. But it appears that message didn't seem to worry lawmakers enough to vote against them.
Well, I think that most of the Republicans who voted against it would have anyway. And most Republicans, 16 of them, did vote against the main bills. Mm-hmm. And that included the Republicans who would be most concerned about that, which is the ones who have primaries. But it didn't scare off the others. And on the Democratic side, well, State Senator Coleman Young of Detroit was the only Democrat to vote against all the bills, to the chagrin of his colleagues. And he says it's because the rules in the grand bargain, or at least the state's part in it, is basically just a state takeover of the city.
Hmm. One part of the legislation that the Senate didn't even take up, but that the House did, was that bill that would have prevented the Detroit Institute of Arts from being able to go back and get a millage renewal or a new millage in Wayne, Oakland, and McLean County. What happened there?
Well, look, this was DOA. Once it left the House and arrived in the Senate, it was necessary to pick up the votes of some Macomb County Republicans in the House, and it was just done after that. Mm. However, you know, the fact that it wasn't part of the package does speak to the importance of the Senate passing a clean package, no amendments, no changes, so it didn't have to go back to the House, so all of that stuff didn't have to be renegotiated. And one of the big reasons that it moved so quickly, actually, was that the Senate recognized that this wasn't just the governor negotiating with the legislature, the city coming and voting, negotiating with the legislature, mm-hmm. Republicans with Democrats, the House with the Senate. This was the state negotiating against the terms already set out in the grand bargain. Changes, even small ones, could have, would have torpedoed the whole thing and sent the pension mess to be litigated.
So when Kevin Orr showed up in Lansing and also up there shaking hands on Mackinac saying, we have to do this and we have to do this fast, people clearly were listening.
Yeah, it appears so, that Kevin Orr made the case on Mackinac Island and he made the case again here in Lansing that for pensioners, if this deal falls apart, it is not mathematically possible for them to do financially better, that no matter how much money you might think the city has in assets, whether it's $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, is the pensioners are going and they're getting thrown in with all the other creditors that are out there. Mm. And you know, without that protected status, and you're taking those city assets and basically spreading them out amongst $12 billion in liabilities.
Rick, take us to the moment after the bills were passed. What was the mood like among the lawmakers?
Well, after the bills were passed, everyone gathered in the governor's office in the state capitol, and Kevin Orr was there, and Randy Richardville was there, Jace Bolger, the House Speaker, was there, you know, even Judge Rose. It was a lot like, you know, after the end of an all-star concert, and all the musicians at the end come back out on stage holding hands, you know, they take their bow.
Right.
For some reason, this detail did not get reported, but they all sang, "I Shall Be Released."
Let's talk about these bills, Rick, in somewhat of a broader context. You know, legislation mm-hmm. in Lansing doesn't happen in a vacuum. And there's talk that this vote could determine what happens with road funding. Explain that to us.
Well, count me among the skeptics.
Okay.
Some people are saying that this could be a template for bipartisan cooperation on other things, especially a bipartisan solution on road funding, because that will not happen without Republicans and Democrats coming together for it. There just aren't enough votes in any, you know, any of the caucuses to do it on their own.
Okay.
But Democrats are putting a lot on the table, that they're saying that if you want us to come across Republicans for your road funding bill, well, we want to see some working class tax relief, maybe the earned income tax credit. They're talking about the pension tax, which is just a non-starter with Republicans. Quite bluntly, they want to make sure that when the vote tallies go up, that there's roughly an equal number of Republicans to Democrats. Mm-hmm. Democrats don't want to be the ones to put most of the votes up for a Republican roads package and then have Republicans hang that on them in the November elections, you know, the tax and spenders.
Yes.
And also, you know, we should point out that you know, this is a big deal where Republicans are coming to Democrats and saying, we need you. We can't do this without you. This is the Democrats' last best chance to negotiate the terms of the rest of this legislative session, especially lame duck, you know, with an eye toward blocking Republican efforts to scrap prevailing wage laws and to shake up the electoral college system that has delivered Michigan to Democratic presidential candidates in election after election after election after election.
Rick, we know Governor Snyder is certainly going to sign this. He said he would.
He held up his pen and said he was ready.
That's it. Do we have any idea when that will happen?
He said the next day or two that obviously it's being, you know, proofread and you know, making sure that every, you know, dot on an I and cross on a T is where it should be. You know, it won't be today. You know, it could be tomorrow, but I would say probably Friday or early next week.
Rick Pluta, Lansing Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. As always, thanks so much, Rick.
As always, my pleasure, Cindy.
To Stephen Henderson now, editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press, which declared today, Lansing, take a bow. And Stephen, we just heard from our Rick Pluta, the governor is going to sign this nine-bill package, but it's just one part of the whole puzzle, right? This horse has not yet crossed the finish line?
Not quite, but, you know, this is the home stretch for sure, getting this legislation passed in Lansing is a huge piece of the puzzle. Really, the only thing left is the vote of the pensioners themselves, who have to, you know, in sufficient numbers support this so that the whole deal finally comes together. But the governor told me this morning, you know, for the first time that, you know, it looks like this will all hang together and it'll happen, which I think is an enormous relief for him, but also, you know, something of a big political victory.
Very much so. And I'm sure these pensioners have been keeping a very close eye on what was or wasn't going to happen in Lansing before deciding how they were going to vote. Are you hearing from them?
A little bit. I mean, I'm more hearing from their representatives who have been talking to me about the uncertainty that they face. You know, I think a lot of pensioners are still not wild about the idea of taking any cut at all. And they've got to do the calculus to sort of figure out that, yeah, that's the ideal, but the more likely resolution is some cut. And if you're going to take some cut, this is a reasonable cut to take. But, you know, each person has to decide that on their own. And so I'm hearing a lot from the leadership about what they're hearing from rank and file about how difficult that decision is and how much time people are taking to make it.
It has to be a hard decision for, you know, you're a retiree and you're looking at this big old, you know, document and you're supposed to plow through that, and you have to think in terms of finances and then emotion.
Yes, that's right. That's a great way to put it. I mean, the financial part of it is not insignificant. I mean, these are not people, for the most part, who make a lot of money off these pensions. These aren't giant pensions that we hear sometimes about in the public sector. They're very meager. And even a small cut, which is what, you know, what this is going to sting. It's going to make a difference in their lives. But the emotional part is just as important. And the emotional part is tied up at least somewhat in the idea of a promise kept or broken. That the city promised these people that they would get this money and is now saying you can't have it. And I think there is a lot of justifiable anger about that. There's a lot of, trepidation about what that means down the road. If this promise is broken, could others be? And they've got to sort through all of that. And I am enormously sympathetic to these pensioners and how they vote. I think this has got to be one of the toughest choices they'll ever make in their lives.
Let's go back to the Senate vote that happened yesterday, Stephen, and give us your sense of what the Senate and the House coming together, what this means for the city and for Michigan going forward.
Well, I think you can look at some of the things that were said. You had senators, just like you did in the House last week, you had people from West Michigan standing up talking about how they stand with Detroit. I mean, I don't think you have to have been here long to note how unusual that is and almost unprecedented. This idea that the fortunes of Detroit are tied in with the fortunes of people, not just the whole state, but individually with people from other specific places in Michigan, that's all new. And we heard so much of that with the House debate and then last week on Mackinac and then again with the Senate debate this week. But you have to start, I think, believing that it's real and that these things that people are saying are sincere. And then I think you can allow yourself to hope that carries forward, because there are going to be other things that we're going to need to work on together to get Detroit back to where we all think it should be.
Take off your newsman's hat for a moment, if you will, and talk to us as a lifelong Detroiter. When you realize that this Detroit aid package was passed by the Republican-controlled House and Senate, the effort was led by the Republican governor. As a Detroiter, how did you feel?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little through the looking glass, right? This is not the relationship we've had with Lansing, with outstate Republicans, not in my lifetime. And, you know, I know that there are lots of Detroiters who are still very skeptical about this and believe that there is some angle to this that's not yet apparent, that, you know, benefits them and somehow will harm us. But you know, I think I've looked as closely at this stuff as anybody, and I don't see it. I mean, I think it is genuine, and it is remarkable that you have, and it's, you know, it's not everything. There's still lots of hurdles we're going to have to overcome. But it is a real effort to reach out that I don't remember seeing before as a Detroiter.
We're speaking with editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press and lifelong Detroiter Stephen Henderson as we talk about the passage of the $195 million deal for Detroit by the state Senate, now on its way to being signed by Governor Snyder. And you referred to skeptics, and with that, I have to ask you about what we heard from Senator Coleman Young of Detroit yesterday. He explained to us why he was the only Democrat to vote no on all 9 bills in the package.
It simply won't do for the people of my city, my friends, my neighbors, my constituents, to be put under the thumb of another body handpicked by this administration to enact policies in the own best interests not Detroit's.
Stephen, doesn't that do a disservice to the city? I mean, here we have Republican lawmakers saying we're going to help and often going against what some in their own party want. And here's Coleman Young going, we don't want your help. Keep your nose out of our business.
Yeah, well, that defines the relationship we've had with Lansing for a really long time. You know, what's ironic is that, you know, Senator Young is not even old enough to remember any of that stuff, right?
Right.
This is a guy parroting things he's heard from other people, and shame on him for doing that rather than living in the moment and being present for what's happening in Lansing, which is significant, that you know, he wouldn't know that the Republican legislature of 20 or 30 years ago would have been saying and doing something very different with regard to this than this legislature has done. And he's doing a disservice to them, but also to its constituents. You know, the district he represents doesn't have lights for the most part, doesn't have, you know, anyone to tear down hundreds of thousands of abandoned houses. You know, life is unlivable for the people who live in his district. And this package is a way to make it better. How you justify, you know, sort of a defiant stand against help to do that is quite beyond me.
Stephen, in your opinion, now that this part of the grand bargain, this big piece is in place, how do you think this whole process was managed? And who gets credit for this? Is it Kevin Orr? Is it Judge Rosen? Is it Governor Snyder? Is it everybody?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest credit is probably going to go to Judge Rosen, who, you know, may or may not have dreamed this up on his own, but certainly he was the first person to put it out in the public that he wanted to do it, you know, and has shepherded it through all of the different phases. I mean, you had an enormous hurdle with the foundations themselves, right?
Yeah.
And going to them and saying, hey, we want you guys to put all this money in. That wasn't an easy sell. Then he had to get to the DIA and get them to put money in. And then he had to get to the state. And ultimately, he also had to get the unions to kick in. So he really has, I think, emerged, and he didn't do that alone, of course,
mm-hmm.
but I think he is the prime sort of leadership figure there. But then you also have, you've got the governor getting the legislature to do that. You have the heads of both houses in the legislature playing significant roles. There's a lot of credit to go around. And again, it's all toward an unprecedented end that I think, you know, 20, 30 years from now, they will still be talking and writing about what was accomplished in this time for the city.
Stephen Henderson, Detroit Free Press editorial page editor. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Stephen. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.